Okay, you get to listen to most of the song today, so I'm going to have to cut in there because I would hate to have you listen to the whole song. Now, that would be virtually unprecedented. It is a great song, but, you know, we might have to start paying Yoko for royalties if we did that. So you're going to have to listen to me talk over it for a while here and then cut in and tell you that you're listening to Truth Jihad Radio right here on We the People Radio Network. I'm Kevin Barrett. I do the show every Saturday and Sunday, same time, same channel, 2 to 4 p.m. Central Time, which is the ruling time zone on this continent, at least for Patriot Radio. And I try to bring you the best guests, the most interesting people that you'll rarely hear about in the mainstream media, the people who have something really important to say that isn't getting heard. Unfortunately, one of the reasons that sometimes we get bring on people who are saying important things that aren't being heard is because the message that they're carrying is so painful, so depressing, so, oh, it's a downer, man. We don't want to hear about this. Oh, they blew up the World Trade Center with 3,000 people inside. Yeesh. Oh, well, let's go back to you know, something a little more, what should I say, amusing? Well, you know, just say anything but that. Please, not that. But, you know, we do talk about that and other highly important and under-treated subjects. And today, I do have a couple of fascinating guests. First-hour guest, who I don't believe is up yet, but should be before too long, is Chris Deffendorf. Now, Chris Deffendorf is the world record holder for freestyle rapping. You know, I forget exactly what his record is, but it's a very, very lengthy rap, something like 16 hours, I think. And he's also a friend, should I say, I don't know, comrade with Chuck D of Public Enemy. And he's done a whole lot of fascinating stuff, including an audio version of David Ray Griffin's 9/11 books. So Chris is a fascinating, very happening guy, and he'll be on for the first hour. And the second hour, we'll be bringing you Richard Curtis, a philosophy professor from Seattle. He is also a 9/11 truth supporter. And Richard Curtis and I had a little email dialogue on the Israel-Palestine issue. I'm a supporter of the one-state solution, a democratic single state for all rightful inhabitants of the area, which includes everybody that lives there now, plus the ethnic cleansing victims and their descendants. And Richard is a partisan of the two-state solution, that is some form of slicing up historic Palestine into a Jewish state of Israel and, who knows, a Muslim state or whatever. But that wouldn't work because a lot of the native people are not Muslim. So who knows, but it's some other kind of state of Palestine alongside Israel. So we'll have that conversation. It's always an interesting one, and it's very rare that you'll ever get to hear this thing debated on the media here because, well, it's just not allowed in the mainstream media. You're not allowed to advocate the one-state solution. There are a couple of rare exceptions. There's been a little bit of pro-one-state stuff in the New York Review of Books by a guy named Tony Jute. I'm not sure how to pronounce his name. Anyway, he's a very interesting writer. But for the most part, you'll never hear about this in the mainstream. So it should be a very illuminating discussion of that topic. Let's see. I don't know if we have Chris on board yet, but we should have him on pretty soon. So before we bring him on, I guess I can tell you about future radio shows. Tomorrow, on this same show, I have a woman named Laura Cagle, who is the state death penalty coordinator for Georgia, for Amnesty International, that is. She's not coordinating dishing out the death penalty. She's coordinating fighting against it down there in Georgia. And she's trying to save Troy Davis, who's scheduled for execution in the next couple of days. And there's really no evidence against him. He just had lousy representation. You know, they just processed him like in a mechanical way, like the so-called justice system so often does. And so here we have a very possibly innocent man who's about to be executed down there. And so she's going to come on and try and give you some information about how you can help save this guy's life. That's one of the problems with the death penalty is that you don't really get a second chance if you made a mistake. That's why I'm against the death penalty. You can find out about that position by going to my website, barrettforcongress.us. Click on the issues page, and down there, number 25 of my 25 issues is the death penalty, which I believe, should be abolished. I'll give you a long list of reasons for that if you go to that webpage. But for now, suffice it to say that it's just barbaric and so irreversible. And the way it's implemented in this country is so ridiculously racist. There's no real due process for these trials. The whole justice system is really a scam. It's like a bunch of witch doctors, you know, who say, see, we catch people who do bad things. Better not do any bad things. And, you know, some people believe that, and who knows, maybe it does improve their behavior. But in terms of actually getting the real criminals and prosecuting people who've done terrible things, it doesn't work very well. 9/11 being a case in point, there's never been a more obvious and clear case of arson for profit than the case of self-confessed demolisher of Building 7, Larry Silverstein, who actually went on the air on PBS national TV and admitted that he was part of a decision to pull Building 7. He collected nearly $1 billion on Building 7 alone. He's had taken in a total of $4.5 billion for his insurance, plus a few more billion for other stuff, and he's working on another $11 billion, which will bring his total profits on his six-week investment in the worst white elephant in real estate history to something pushing $20 billion. Not bad for a horrendously idiotic six-week investment in the worst possible piece of real estate ever to be available on the planet. Yeah, lucky Larry. So anyway, he's not being hauled before the courts. He's not even being investigated. And it's obvious the justice system is really completely unrelated to the concept of justice. And I do hope that when Laura comes on tomorrow, we'll be able to help out Troy Davis. You can read Laura's article on Counterpunch. Just Google her name, K-A-G-E-L, and Troy Davis. That's spelled the way it sounds, and maybe Counterpunch, and you'll come up with that. That should be an interesting conversation. In the second hour, we're going to be bringing on another person associated with the website Counterpunch, run by the evil foe of 9/11 truth, Alexander Coburn. He's actually not evil. He's a pretty good guy in most areas. I don't know what's wrong with him with his total blinders on the 9/11 issue. Who knows? Maybe he'll recover someday. But I'm not bringing him on. I'm bringing on Dave Lindorf, a much more reasonable individual. Dave Lindorf is a first-rank journalist. He's a contributor to all sorts of outlets like The Nation, Salon.com. He's written for, I think, Business Week and a whole bunch of mainstream publications, as well as the less mainstream ones like Counterpunch. And he is the author of The Case for Impeachment. He has a website called thiscan'tbehappening.com. Is it com or is it org? I don't know. It's called This Can't Be Happening anyway. You'll figure it out if you Google it. And Dave's going to be on talking about the big, you know, mess that we're in right now in this country. The economy is in a mess. The global security situation is in a mess. And Dave has a good sense of humor, so he's always a lot of fun to have on the air. It should be great. And coming up next week, I'm going to bring on Daniel Davis, Captain Daniel Davis, U.S. Army captain. He's got a whole bunch of military medals, Purple Hearts, and stuff like that. And he's also a 9/11 Truth supporter, and he's run for Congress before. So he's going to be talking about the alternative candidacies for Congress, such as my own. And we'll also be discussing one of his pet issues, which is the energy issue. So that sounds like fun. And then next week, same time, same channel, right here on We the People Radio Network, we will be bringing on Elias Davidson. Elias Davidson, I think, he's really just about my favorite 9/11 truth activist out there. He's a brilliant man, all-around kind of jack-of-all-trades renaissance guy. He's the son of Holocaust survivors. He's done all sorts of human rights work. He is a musician. He's got a long list of accomplishments, and among them is the research that he has done on 9/11, specifically on the case or the non-case against the alleged 19 hijackers. Elias Davidson points out there's no evidence whatsoever against any of these guys. So why are we still believing this fairy tale? It'll be great to have him on. Well, listen, we don't seem to be able to pick up our first guest yet. There may be some technical difficulties in the control room, but we will bring on a call. Oh, looks like we do have our first guest, and we also have our first caller. I guess I'd better take the guest first and then the caller. So, okay, I think we do have Chris Evan Effendorf on the line. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm fine, Kevin. How are you?
Hey, pretty good. I was just yakking away, waiting for you to show up. What's up?
Well, good to talk to you. Good to be back on We the People again. I actually think the caller, either it was me or it's my friend C-Doc, who is David C. Snyder, who's an amazing producer of music, as well as he does the videos for Public Enemy. So I invited him to give a call in today. So I think that might actually be him, or it's me. I don't know.
Well, Dave, or anybody else who wants to call in, feel free to just call in whenever. Chris, should we just open it up until people can call in anytime they want, even now, before we get into anything?
Sure.
Sure, okay. So caller.
Sure, why not?
Open call-in day. Chris Deffendorf is a very fluid-tongued individual, the world record holder. I'll talk about fluid tongue. The world record holder for freestyle rap. How long did you go? Was it 16 hours, Chris?
Yeah, I did it for 16 hours, and without breaks, it turned out to 13 and a half hours of just continuous verbiage. And that's at a fast tempo, too. It's at, like, double time. And I'm not trying to brag. I just want to be clear. It's easy on the human body to maintain if you're going to dance all night, you want to dance at a certain tempo. If you dance too slow, you can't do it. If you dance too fast. So I did some research, and it's actually like 133 beats per minute, which is really, really fast. Yeah. It's otherwise known as like the Bone Thugs Harmony style. It sounds really fast, but it's really easier on your body if you want to do longer rapping to do, a long. So I spent 500,000 syllables on that day. That was probably actually a year and a week ago. And, I'm going to actually make it into a yearly thing where I'm going to try to break my world record every year.
Holy man. Well, that's pretty impressive. So you're not going to be at a loss for words no matter who calls and no matter what they ask you. So let's bring them on. First caller is Rick from California. Hello, Rick.
Hey, how's it going? How are you doing today?
Oh, okay. How are you doing?
Hey, Rick. Pretty good. Hey, how's it going, guys? I have a question about what you were talking about right now. That there's so many people with so many facts out there about 9/11, and yet, other people just don't want to seem to either realize what's going on or just turn a blind eye to it,
They sure do. That's absolutely right, Rick. You're asking, like, why do we think that is?
Yeah, well, I'm trying to find out why it is that people are just turning a blind eye. When there's so much facts out there, there's a lot of facts out there that show that it was not people living in the cave doing this stuff.
Yeah. Well, it's a real good question. Obviously, the media brainwashing has something to do with it. The traumatic mind control event itself has a lot to do with it. It was, part of what Naomi Klein calls the shock doctrine. Shock the heck out of people, and you can get them to do whatever you want them to do. So they shocked us on 9/11 and reduced us to an infantile state, and then came in as the voice of authority, the parental figure who reassures us and tells us who did this and who we have to hate, and so we have to love Big Brother and hate the external enemy and all of that. It was a very effective, very carefully planned out psychological operation, and then the media just got behind it and has been pumping out that same old BS tune ever since. And so I think those are the two big reasons, the shock doctrine of the mind control plus the media follow-up. What do you think, Chris?
Well, it's actually, I'm glad you asked me. I figured you would since I'm your guest. But I was just listening to some of your past shows last night. And I really want to bring up, I think that you might be able to relate to this, because the other day you were talking with someone about like psychology and Jungian psychology and things. And I've actually done a lot of investigation into Stanislav Grof's work. He wrote a book called The Adventures of Self-Discovery. And in it, he describes his holotropic breath technique. And what he describes is basically there's four steps to this kind of rebirthing process. And I want to look at, the four steps really briefly, because I really think they tie into any struggle or, quest to become oneself. And especially in terms of 9/11 truth, I think that we can use, a concrete example, so to speak. So he describes that, when you're one with your mother in the womb for 9 months, you're one with the goddess, you're in paradise. You think that she, you're completely cared for. You think that, you and the mother goddess or whatever are one, And then all of a sudden, biology says, okay, kid, 9 months is up. Time to come out.
Right. You're ripped untimely from your mother's womb, as in Macbeth.
Right.
We'll be back in a moment to pick this up, so stay tuned. Welcome back to Truth Jihad Radio, right here on We the People Radio Network. I'm Kevin Barrett. I'm talking with Chris Deffendorf, a.k.a. Def, the world record holder for freestyle rap. And Chris, we were just talking, well, we had a question from Rick, who is, I believe, still on the line about how is it that people just don't want to hear the facts about 9/11. And you were saying that Stanislav Grof has this psychology of we're all one, feeling a total oneness with the universe while we're in our mother's womb, everything taken care of us. And then just like Macduff, the prophesied hero who was going to dethrone Macbeth in that play, who was ripped untimely from his mother's womb, we all are ripped untimely from the womb, and I guess you can pick it up from there.
Okay, yeah, well, I wanted to bring it up because, you know, it relates to my rap, it relates to 9/11, it relates to any sort of experience of your reality, because basically he, in his studies with this holotropic breath work, you know, he's conducted 2,000 or so studies doing various types of work, but he found that people basically have four types of experiences, and this is, he did some research with psychedelics, and this is, I'm not endorsing psychedelics or, as you said in the past, psychedelic openness. But what I'm trying to say is that he, in his book, The Adventures of Self-Discovery, describes these four different types of characteristics of human experiences that were experienced in his study, you know, in his research. And there's basically, one's called BPM-1, one's called BPM-2, one's called BPM-3, and one's called BPM-4. Now, this BPM stands for Birth Perinatal Matrix. In other words, your experience of being born is very similar to your experience of being dead. BPM-1 is when you're in the womb. BPM-2 is when you're basically being forced into the birth canal, you know, basically being forced your head against the birth canal. BPM-3 is within the birth canal. And BPM-4 is your rebirth, where you think it's your death, but it's really your ego death. But for instance, every one of us experiences birth work. And in terms of how this relates to 9/11 and any other struggle, I want to say to people out there who might feel like it's too complicated, is like, hey, look, the great thing about birth work is, you know, since you're in the physical world here, that you made it through at least once, you can do it again. So how it works is BPM-1, the feelings, this is oceanic awareness, you're one with the mother, you're one with the world, whatever. We've all felt that. That's a BPM-1 system. Okay, so it has certain feelings, you know? And then what happens is you're forced into your mother's, your head's being crushed, you're forced up against this tiny hole, your head's being crushed. You don't realize that your mother loves you and she's trying to have you. And biology is just saying, look, the 9 months are up, you gotta come out of the oven. And so what you do is you start getting paranoid and you think the world's out to get you, you think your mother doesn't love you. So you're in complete and total martyrhood, in the sense of, you know, I'm being misunderstood and being kicked out of paradise. For lack of better words, once you get out of that place, you get into what's called BPM-3. And the feelings that are in there are rage, because you're survival rage. So you're in the your mother's birth canal, okay? You're having, you know, I don't mean to shock anybody here on this conservative record radio station, but, you know, you're having sexual feelings because you're connected with your mother, you know, in that sense.
You know, my listeners can handle that, Chris.
Okay,
they can handle 9/11 was an inside job. They can handle that.
Well, you know, poetic license, right? So, you know, you're also feeling your head's being crushed still. You're in this tiny space. Your mother's having contractions. Your breathing's being cut off. You're having this, you know, difficulty breathing. Plus, you're feeling like you did something wrong because you were kicked out of paradise. That's guilt. You also feel shame, like there's something wrong with you that you know, you're not in your old place. And finally, you work through that. And you work and work through that, and then finally you're born, and you come out into BPM-4. What you thought was your death was really only the death of who you thought you were. And so how that relates to 9/11, I think, is that, you know, we see, you know, you can see where you are in your own process. You know, you feel everybody's against you, you know, say you become aware of the truth of any issue. You feel, then suddenly, you know, you feel like everyone's out to get you, and you gotta, you know, it's the paranoia, it's the, you know, the shock, but it's also the, you know, complete and total anger at the world because your world has completely changed, okay? Then you get into the whole struggle of getting what you want, which is to get the truth out you know, and then you have to work through that. And then finally, you're reborn into the person that you are, you know, the person that you want to be. For instance, I decided I was going to try to break my world's record this year, and I said, well, I'm going to do 40 hours because I know I can do it. And so, you know, for a good part of this year, I was partially in the BPM2 process where I was like, oh, I just got to, I'm struggling against this thing. And then, you know, now I'm just in the process of, you know, like a, sort of a BPM3 thing. You know, if I don't, if, you know, I have all the same similar feelings, you know, feeling something's wrong with me, feeling that, you know, I did something wrong, you know, and because I'm trying to become a new person. And then finally, once I break the world's record, it will be, you know, I will be in BPM4. I'll be reborn as a person that has the Guinness officially. And so I would say to the man who's on the phone, thanks for your call. And, you know, each one of us has our own process. And I think that, you know, when I look at my reality and there's parts of it which I am struggling against, I say to myself, oh, that's me being in BPM2. It's me thinking I have to try to change it. You know, so I go back to this little mantra, is like, you know, everything's right, and I feel angry because the media won't report on 9/11, for example, you know? And so then I look at my impact and I say, you know, you really can't change anybody. You know, and each one of those people that we try to change, they're all going through their own process. So, okay, I just,
good,
you know,
good and
to try to force it is to really, you know, a man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. And all the more so for 9/11, truth is so huge.
Okay, well, Rick, does that make sense to you? Hello,
yeah,
Rick, you're still
right
there?
Yeah, I'm here. Okay. That actually made more sense than 9/11, and I want to thank you guys for that.
Sure. Okay. Appreciate it.
Let me plug my site if you have any questions or if you want any more info. www.scratch.dj. So it's like the old records, you know? Not .com, not .net, .dj. Scratch.dj.
Probably aren't too many of those. Okay, thanks. Thanks, Rick. Well, Chris, yeah, I you know, I think you're onto something by citing Groff. I've read a little bit of Groff. It's been a while. But maybe I should go back and, you know, have a flashback and read Groff again. I think you're onto something with those, especially this, you know, this feeling of, you know, kind of paranoia of the world against you. You know, that naturally we feel that in the 9/11 Truth Movement. And you know, I probably feel that more than a lot of people because, you know, I got really raked over the coals in the media for no particular reason. They just picked me. And since then, to some extent, I've been raked over the coals by a small but vociferous contingent of the 9/11 Truth Movement itself. So, you know, and then my own family is really not on board with this at all either. So it's kind of a, you know, feels like I'm against the world sometimes.
Well, if I can provide a little bit more insight, I want to say about the Groff, first off, what I found interesting is the holotropic breathwork. You know, he was going to call this book called The Adventure of Self-Discovery Beyond Drugs, because he found in his experience with psychedelics and certain things, you know, through government-funded studies that researched this in the 1960s and 70s, that when he developed this holotropic breathwork where people just, like, different types of ways to breathe, people were able to have the same type of experiences they had on all these other substances that,
and
it doesn't require it.
You're going to have to hold your breath and do some breath work, and we'll be right back to finish that breath in just a moment. Kevin Barrett.
1-1000 to 1000. 1-1000 to 1000.
All right. Back in a moment. Okay, we're back, and we're finding out about holotropic breathwork from Stanislav Groff. Actually met some other 9/11 Truth people into that in Colorado. I believe it's Fran. Here's a shout-out to Fran if you're listening. We're talking today with Chris Deppendorf. And, Chris, you were just talking about that breathwork stuff.
Yeah, well, you know, I've studied Tantra for a couple years as well. And, you know, Tantra breathwork, you know, Tantra is not anything to do with sex. It has to do with the, you have a male and female polarity in your body. And so it's, to, you know, basically find balance and harmony by harmonizing the both. So it releases a lot of wonderful energy. But tantric breathwork is a way to get to that. And so that has something to do with, you know, I needed to find strategies because, you know, it's a wrap for a long time. It's a lot of work. So, I started re-exploring the holotropic breathwork. And, I wanted to say that, when you're born, you have this paranoid false ego. You think thought is not real. Literally, paranoia, if you break it down, means para, means false, like paranormal, parasite, whatever. Para means, in Latin, means not real, and noia is thought. So, you know, you're thinking when you're born, oh my God, you know, my head's being crushed and being pushed against this thing, and you're fighting against it. But in reality, it's not, you know, you're basically just, no one is there to tell you, hey, it's really your mom, you're inside of your mother, you're not being killed, you're being born. This is just biology saying, hey, kid, you got to get out of there. It's not personal. But, you know, you really, you know, depending on how difficult your birth is, you know, you can get into a lot of paranoia because you really don't know what you did wrong. You don't know, you know, why you're being kicked out.
Eventually, you struggle through it. God knows when, but you're doing it again.
Right.
You know, what you're saying reminds me a lot of the Tibetan Book of the Dead, because that's
right.
Where, you know, the person actually is given this exact
right.
advice that you're telling me about birth, except in this case, it's when a person's dying and they're paranoid, and then the Tibetan wisdom teacher will sit beside the dying person, whispering in the dying person's ear that it's all your own stuff. It's these monsters you're seeing are all from within yourself.
Yeah, we were just talking during break. I want to let a little of what you just said sit in with me so I can absorb it. But the reality is that, you know, when you're born, you do have these false thoughts, and you are filled with rage for survival because you want to get out. You think you're being killed. And it's a good thing you thought all those feelings and thought all those thoughts, because perhaps if you didn't, you wouldn't be able to get born. So when you get out, you know, you basically have this birth trauma that you've just lived through. It's the most trauma that you've ever experienced, as far as you know. And it forms your false ego. So your false ego is not a good or bad ego. The negative ego is not a good or bad ego. It's a false ego. So it's the one that you used as a shell around you to get through something. It was your way of coping. It was your way of having confidence that you could make it through, and you did make it through, and perhaps it was good that you formed that false ego. So the deal is that the work is to bust your false ego and to build a new positive ego that you'll do for the rest of your life. Like, if you have a false ego, which, you know, you're always getting thoughts like, oh, you're paranoid, thoughts, you know, everyone's out to get me, you know, to bust that, to look at, it's a negative belief. It's something that's limiting. And so I've been working a lot for the last 5 or 6 years, maybe 10 years, on this, about 10 or 11 years, actually, on this thing called image work. And what it is you bust your false image, and then you build an image that is expansive and growing that you'll do for the rest of your life. And it's a process that, you know, maybe we can talk about that later, but I found it's really been helpful to me because I break down little areas of my life where I'm having issues with, like when I first started working with Public Enemy, I was like, I have to do image work because I wanted to work with Public Enemy for the longest time. And by the way, if C-Doc, if you're listening, call in. C-Doc is David C. Snyder. He's a Public Enemy producer as well as the director of a lot of their videos. Call in. And anyways, so I looked at this, and I had to bust the image of who I was in relationship to Public Enemy. And I'd had for all my life, or at least as far as I was aware of Public Enemy. So I busted that. And I forgave myself by, you know, just letting it be okay that I have this image that I want to get rid of, you know, an image of who I am in relationship to my world, in particular in relationship specifically with Public Enemy, and then to build one that I'll do for the rest of my life. So I want to share with you and your listeners a couple of these images, because basically they can be summed up in 6 words. You imagine a central core word, and then like almost like a jewel being set by 5, or a diamond being set by 5 jewels around it. So in the center, for instance, you'd have let me give you one off the beaten track, because you know Ken Jenkins.
When I first
started working with Ken, I was like, I have to bust my image, because, you know, he's a really important person to me, and so I wanted to bust it. So I built an image where I'll be loving. The core word is loving. Now, you have to love yourself first. All these things have to relate to me first, and then it spills out to my reality, and it can. But, you know, I've shared this with them. So, loving, what does that mean? Well, it has like a center, it's like a centered diamond that's being set by five different words. One is laughing. One is providing. One is sharing. One is harnessing. And one is seeing. And so, you know, it's kind of has a metaphysical meaning to that, but in reality, it's a reminder to myself that no matter what happens till I'm dead, whenever I think can, I'm thinking, how can I, in the moment, be the most loving person I can be? When I have, you know, I can see myself for who I am, you know. I can laugh with myself about what I think is fun, and I can provide for myself, and I can share myself with people who are trustworthy, you know. So, for instance, this doing this radio show is a way of me honoring my relationship with Ken, my spirituality. You know what I'm saying? My commitment to Ken as a human being to be responsible, you know?
Really, that's really cool. And, you know, I like having a loving in the center of it. That works for me. It's like the heart chakra in the center of the human kind of thing.
Oh, nice picture. Let me give you a couple others, okay? I got 21 here. But I'll give you just the main words, and let me give you the ones around it. The main word for Ken is loving. Then I have including is another image I did. Another one is recognizing. Another one is inspiring. Another one is wondering. Another one is introspecting. Another one is committing. Another one is flexing. Another one is transforming. Another one of them is healing. Another one is caring. Another one is giving. Then I have helping, purifying, and sourcing. And I also have curiosity and clean. So every single one of those, besides about four of them because I don't have them in front of me, every single one of those words has like five different words. So these are kind of like maps to the future. So in other words, as I'm being reborn into the person which I will be in the future, I don't have to get paranoid because I have something to fall back on. Like, for instance, one of my best friends, you know, I was having problems in my relationship with her. And so I decided to do this image work. So now whenever I think of her, I know what to do. So if somebody reminds me of her, I'll know I have a map. So I don't have to go into panic. You know what I'm saying? I have a map to do it. And the more I work with it every day, the more confidence I have that I'm, you know, being more of who I am.
So, but Chris, are you actually doing the breath work while you're thinking about these words?
Yeah. Well, this thing is that when I did the last rap thing, you know, I decided to only rap about things that I had processed. And so, absolutely. I mean, they're really a part of me. I don't really separate them from myself. It's just kind of like, you know, all your thoughts and your beliefs and your feelings come from your image. So, you know, I kind of did in the positive sense of brainwashing, in the positive sense of conditioning. You know, I busted the old images, forgave myself for, you know, you're conditioned to think such and such. So you got to, whether that's good or bad is up to you in the moment to decide. So what you do is you forgive yourself for being conditioned, allowing it, and then build something that you can really say, hey, this is something I built. So then at the end of the day, I can say, how loving was I? Okay? I was working with Ken before I got into 9/11. So all the time when I'm in 9/11, doing 9/11 work, I'm like, and when I'm rapping and doing this breath work, I'm just like, okay, well, how loving am I being myself first? You know, do I want to take a break? You know, like I'm trying to be nice to myself. You know, trying to transform myself. If I see something in the world that I don't like, how can I transform, you know, that? I guess we're going to break.
Well, we sure are, but we'll be transforming back into the program after the break. So stick around. Kevin Barrett with Chris Deffendorf.
I found out.
All right, welcome back. This is the Truth Jihad Radio Show. I'm Kevin Barrett. This hour I'm talking with Chris Deffendorf, world record holder for freestyle rap. And we're talking about the way that you can recreate your relationships with other people and indeed your relationship with yourself through a process of choosing positively inflected words and building a sort of a constellation of words that will help frame your relationship with yourself or with that person. So, Chris, pick it up where you left off, because I can't paraphrase you. You're going to have to paraphrase yourself.
Okay. Well, I want to say that if you want to see the quick paraphrasing, I just got my new website up. It's www.scratch.dj. So not, it's like the old, like the record players, you know, it's like hip-hop DJs. Scratch.dj. So it's not .com, it's scratch.dj. It's the country of Djibouti, incidentally. Basically, it's a process that I've used that you develop words that I'll do towards myself first, and then I'll let them spill out into my reality as I choose where I want. So, for instance, if there's a problem in my local community, sometimes, going up against a brick wall is just like, I mean, it's folly. I mean, you know, if there's so much resistance and someone tries to control you so much, why do you want to put your power in them when you can put it in, like I was telling Kevin during the break, in thousands of other places? For instance, a couple years ago, I had a fight with a woman who I love, and decided to, rather than sit there and listen to all these tape loops about why I'm ultimately not good enough to get what I want with this woman, I decided to do image work. And so what I did is I made it so that whenever I think of this woman, I made a map for myself how to go forward. And during the break, Kevin picked another word, and actually that was for someone at the library here. I'm actually outside the library. It's interesting we chose this word. Because a friend of mine was working at this library, and, we were fighting, and I basically said, well, you know, I'm not going to do this crap. I'm just going to, like, build it. So the word I came up with was inspiring. So I have to inspire myself first. Now, then let that spill out over to him, so he'll be inspiring me. So how do I do that? Well, inspiring has five components in this map. Building, trusting, reframing, blessing, and dreaming. So I'll be dreaming myself, I'll be building myself, I'll be trusting myself, I'll be reframing myself, and I'll be blessing myself, and therefore I will be inspiring. And in doing this image work, you got to really pick the right words. If you want more information about this, Lazarus.com has a tape called Building and Busting Image, which is the tape that I kind of adapt this from, but it's Lazaris.com, not Lazarus, but Lazarus, Lazaris.com, it's Busting and Building Image. And you can stream it from the website. But anyways, inspiring, and I wanted to say, touch on this before it gets to your question or anything, reframing, what that means is you can look at it and you can see where you are, and you can, like, you're holding up a picture frame, and you're like, oh, these thoughts and feelings are like, this is like me when I was 7, you know, or this is how I felt yesterday. Okay, and now hold up another picture frame. Okay, this is how I feel now. And I'm like, okay, now here's where I want to be in the future. So it's like you're reframing your reality, reframing myself, you know. So in other words, if I'm having a problem with 9/11 truth and getting on the media or something, which I am, I think a lot of us are, I can reframe it and say, oh, this is me in BPM 2, you know, or this is me where I am in my birth process and feeling hopeless because I can't get through. And so how that relates is, oh, this is me relating to my reality as if it was my mother trying to kick me out of the womb. When in reality, that's just blame and judgment, and ultimately, you know, we're going to get there. 9/11 truth, we'll get there because it's truth stands.
Okay. And speaking of getting there, we do have a caller who's trying to get there.
Great.
I have it as D-O-V. Would that be a friend of yours?
I don't know. I don't think it's D-O-V.
Okay. Well, hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hey, Chris, hello? It's C-Doc from Flame Jam.
All right, it's C-Doc. What's up? This is my man, C-Doc. What's going on?
Nothing. Just out and about. Sorry, it took me so long to call in. I had to do a couple of running errands and visit some family before they went out on a trip. So.
All right. Well, cool. I'm glad you called in.
Yeah. Well, welcome.
Do you want to introduce yourself? Tell everybody what you do and what you're known for, and plug your stuff.
Okay. My name is C-Doc. I work for Chuck D. Slam Jam's label. I do the videos for Public Enemy for the past couple years now, and I'm the head of the video department for the label, as well as I produce music and MC a little bit, and my group is called The Impossibles, and we are the world's first virtual rap squad, And I have another group called Lowdown. We do old school mid 90s, early 90s kind of throwback hip hop.
I want to say, if I may cut you off, Lowdown is the shit. Excuse me. Lowdown is the funk. Lowdown album is great. C-Dot can say the concept, but it's basically, if you like the Tribe Called Quest Low End Theory album, which is an amazing album.
Oh, yeah, I love that album.
Their whole band is like, if that was not an album, but it was a group, that's what the sound was like. And I picked C-Dot for my True School in the Jungle Groove Foundation because he's an all-around great guy and an excellent producer. He produced this one song called Watch the Door, which is a remix of a Public Enemy cut, but also because when he says he's the first virtual rap squad, you know, he's one of the first people, not the only people that I know of, that was, you know, you want to say it? This is about how MP3 sharing and how you did the album is like, what virtual, can you say what virtual means?
It started off in the late 90s when MP3 technology really first hit, and it became a viable, way of compressing sound to transmit through email and online, quicker than, in an age of dial-up, it was quicker than trying to, send WAV files, which would have taken forever. But what we did, what I thought was, instead of, if I can send a whole song, an entire song, over the internet to people, why can't I send pieces of the song to people? And so I'd send a beat out to somebody and have them record vocals and then send the vocals back to me. And so we were able to record with people in different places and virtually set up studios. And that's what was the foundation of the group, The Impossibles. We were the first group to actually do that and record over the internet.
They didn't even know each other except through the internet. So they made a whole album before they even met in person.
Well, that's amazing. Wait, that's pretty close.
Yeah.
If I can stretch that, I just want to say I have this project down in the rainforest, and you can read about it at www.scratch.dj. There's a True School site. But I work with an Amazon tribe in the rainforest that wants to work with hip-hop, and the deal is they're in the rainforest, but MIT is giving them free laptops. And it's the one laptop per child program, but they're like actually like hand-crankable laptops. And so they'll be able to record. They'll be able to do what C-Doc did. With our artists, and we got KRS-One, Chuck D is down with us, Johnny Juice from Public Enemy, a lot of people, Afrika Bambaataa, all these people are down with us. So we're trying to show the tribe that, as Rakim said, you want to say it, C-Doc, it ain't where you're from.
It's where you're at.
Right, it's where you're at, mentally, spiritually, et cetera. So, that's it. What do you want to talk about, Kevin?
Well, that's some great stuff. My kids are going to be amazed by this because they're huge Public Enemy fans. They've gone and ransacked all the hip hop in my collection, and that's what they like the best. They've gone out and gotten a lot of the rest of it from the library, and they're going to be really interested in this. So I'm really happy that you could come on and share this with us, C-Doc.
Oh yeah,
how much more time we got?
Well, we're actually coming up kind of here on the end pretty quick. We only have about 2 minutes left here, a little under.
Well, let's order a pizza and let's make a party out of this.
There you go. Call out. Well, you better have a fast pizza delivery guy then.
Well, I want to just plug. If you go to YouTube and you Google Command Pix, CommandPix, that's C-Doc's site. He gives me $5 every time I mention it on the radio. It's Command Pix at YouTube, and that's a joke. But if you got the cash, seriously, my PayPal. Command Pix makes these amazing videos for Public Enemy as well as his own stuff and the Lowdown stuff. It's just hysterical and wonderful. So
there's a lot of stuff, a lot of different stuff up at the YouTube site. All the PE videos I've done. Some other stuff, and we got more stuff coming up. I just finished a video with MC Lux. We shot up in New York, which is a lot of fun, so.
MC who? MC who? We didn't hear it.
Oh, I'm sorry, MC Light.
You did it for MC Light?
Yeah, did a brand new video for MC Light. It'll be coming out pretty soon.
I had coffee with her in 1990. Lynn Q and I and her had coffee. Are you on? Is she going to be on during the break?
Yeah, it's going to be a really short break, though.
Actually, you know something? I have to go because I'm at the library. I got to pack up my computer. I got to get going.
Okay, well, it's been great having you.
I can come back for another word.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. And, hey, C-Doc, Kevin, thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks. And quick, hit your website again. We got 20 seconds.
www.scratch.dj and C-Doc.
A command, I think it's just commandpix.com. commandpix.com.
All right. Well, check it out, folks. We'll be back in just a moment. So stay tuned. All right. Welcome back to the second hour of today's edition of Truth Jihad Radio, right here on We the People Radio Network, where we bring on the kind of guests that you're not too likely to hear on the National Public Radio airwaves or the Fox News radio airwaves or anything like that. You're not going to hear a whole lot of Chris Deffendorf there, and you're not going to hear a whole lot of the kind of discussion that we will be having here in just a few moments. I will be talking with Richard Curtis. Richard is a philosophy professor from the Seattle, Washington area. He is listed at patriotsquestion911.com, that illustrious website. And Richard is a 9/11 truth supporter from a ways back. Very interesting guy. I've had some great email conversations with him, and one of our recent ones has turned around the subject of what's the best solution to the Israeli-Palestinian dispute. You know, that's always a good one to bring up at the dinner table if you need to get a conversation going. People always have heated opinions on this, and especially people who have any kind of stake in it, who've, you know, gotten involved in it somehow. You know, people who've been to Israel and really, you know, like it and identify with it always get very passionately attached to you know, maintaining Israel as a Jewish state and whatever. And then the, you know, people who are familiar with the Arab Islamic world, such as myself, often are very likely to have the exact opposite kind of approach and be very committed to the justice for the Palestinian people who were ethnic cleansed from their own land in order to create this Jewish state. And those of us who have that perspective tend to advocate a one-state solution for everybody who lives there. We're not saying throw anybody into the ocean or, you know, over the sea or, you know, send anybody home. Just let everybody there vote on what kind of state they want. And the vote would clearly favor the one-state solution. No special interest group, no ethnicity, nobody gets any kind of preference or privilege, just a country with an equal protection clause like we have here in the USA, and, you know, like South Africa has since apartheid there was dismantled. So that's the one-state solution. The two-state solution is the more traditional one that the U.S. government has supposedly gotten behind since the Camp David Accords. But there hasn't been a whole lot of progress on that front. So anyway, Richard is a partisan of that two-state solution. I'm a partisan of the one-state solution. We'll have a conversation about that. And people will be able to call in and join that conversation here. The number for future reference, because I'm not going to bring it up right away, is area code 512-646-1984. That's 512-646-1984. Well, I believe we do have Richard on the line. So let's welcome him, a brave 9/11 truth speaker, philosophy professor, and all-around good guy. Welcome, Richard Curtis. How are you, Richard?
Salam alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam.
I'm doing well, Kevin. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. So, yeah, what's new in your life?
What's new in my life? Well, in Seattle here, we're contemplating reforming one of the groups around a more specific political program. And what I'm tossing around is the idea of an overtly anti-capitalist 9/11 group.
You know, my libertarian friends are going to love that.
Well, yes, and admittedly, there's a wide gulf of disagreement in the 9/11 community on that kind of question. You know, what does it mean to be anti-imperial? And my position is that to be anti-imperial, you have to be anti-capitalist. But at the same time, it's, of course, vitally important that as a truth movement, even if we advocate different approaches to a solution, I think it's important for us to get along well.
Well, I agree completely. I've been pulling my hair out trying to get along with the truth movement, but a small contingent of naysayers has been insisting on not getting along with me. So, you know, I don't know what to do with that. But, I agree.
Set a bad example of not getting along, too, and I think we have to overcome that and do whatever we can to get along, even when we're talking about things where we don't agree.
Indeed. And there may be some common ground there between, you know, so-called left and right. The 9/11 truth left is what Barry Zwicker calls the conscious left. That is the left that's not deluded into thinking it's, you know, it's happy in some fool's paradise and there's just minor matters that need to be tinkered with. The conscious left knows just how bad it is. And also, I think the 9/11 truth right, you know, the libertarian people that I'm a little more associated with these days than I defected from the left, are also the conscious right. And you know, both, we should all be able to agree, for example, that allowing bankers a monopoly on the currency so they can create currency out of nothing at interest is a completely crazy way to run a country's currency system. And it's interesting, the libertarians seem to be more aware of that issue than most of the people on the left, even though normally the left is more skeptical of private power and the right is more skeptical of public power. But here we have this private cartel running the world's money supply, and it's mostly people on the so-called right who are aware of this.
Yeah, I think it's more a matter of sort of how people are just prioritizing the issue. Because certainly, you know, I wouldn't disagree with the way you're characterizing that. But it's more a matter that if you're coming at it from the position that capitalism itself is at issue, then the details of how it's managed, you know, are really inconsequential to that debate.
Yeah, Richard, so how would you define capitalism? Because, it, you know, the word capitalism can really apply to anything from relatively small-scale producers like the, you know, organic farmers out in my neck of the woods who often have fairly small-scale enterprises. They have to capitalize those enterprises and try to turn a profit in order to survive. And in that system, of course, if you compare it to the Soviet system of collective agriculture, the so-called capitalist system of small producers produced almost all the food for the Russians during that period. Clearly it works better, but capitalism can also describe so-called monopoly capitalism of these gigantic cartels that are really swallowing up all competition at the global scale. So how do you see capitalism?
Well, I see it as part of, as a historical continuum in which you've picked out sort of a beginning and an end, but in general, capitalism would be the private ownership of economically productive property, so farms and factories primarily, and socialism is about the collective ownership of those economically productive properties. And it's true that there are some good models for how ownership can be collective, you know, a workers collective that owns a factory, for example. And there are, you know, there are bad models where, you know, there are times when Soviet planning, I think, did a fairly good job of accomplishing what it was trying to accomplish. But as a long-term process, I think it showed that the planning was, you know, it couldn't be as dynamic as reality.
Right.
And that's always,
that's
a horrible problem with reality. It always is escaping our plan.
Okay, well, you know, Richard, we already have a caller, and so let's go ahead and be nice to our callers and just, you know, bring them on up. First caller is Robert from Arizona.
Hello, Dr.
Hello, Robert. Hi.
I'm calling up because I want you to know that I want to play nice with everybody in the field, whether I agree with them or not. I think it's important that we state what we see and why we see what we see and allow others to do the same. And I don't care if it's 9/11 or politics or economic systems. It doesn't matter what it is. The world gets ahead a lot faster when people play nice. And it's amazing to me why so many people get so heated up about somebody who sees something different than them. I for example, am one of these fellows who encouraged the producer of September Clues to come out with a high-definition version because the YouTube versions were impossible to see a low-grade video and not know what you were looking at because his claim that perhaps some of the images inserted in the television feeds that day were fake you couldn't tell by looking at it at YouTube. And yet,
right.
They finally did get out a high-def version, which I threw up on a website and then sharing with the world for free. It's quite obvious that there are some serious problems with what we were fed that day by the mainstream media and, I suspect, the Pentagon.
Well, that's what some people seem to think. I still haven't convinced myself of that. I've looked at both sides of that and have ended up kind of agnostic, but seeing that some of the stuff in the original September clue definitely was off base, but perhaps some of it isn't. I don't know. Anyway, could you give a website where people can look at that, and then I'll get back to Richard.
Absolutely, Doctor. The website is network76.com, and it's a free download, September Clues. It's an open source, I should say an AVI format that just about any computer can digest and regurgitate. And it's in so much higher definition that some of the images are quite obvious, at least in my opinion, that there's something grossly wrong. Airliners are not charcoal black in all forms of light and in all angles of turn and bank and so on. Normally you see a little different definition to something as it travels through the sky. And with the obvious studio quality and field quality network cameras that were in use that day, it's pretty obvious that there are some serious problems. When you see it in high def, I think you'll be shocked.
Thanks for that recommendation, Robert. People want to see both sides of that issue. I think that's fine. I don't think we should be leading with that issue in our public relations campaign. But the other side of that, of course, the supposed debunking of September clues, you can find that at Eric Salter's website, which I believe is questionsquestions.net. Thanks, Robert. I appreciate the input.
Thank you.
I'd like to say that coming back to the first thing that Robert was saying, that I think what he's expressing there is, I'd call that a really basic democratic sensibility. That's what it means to have a democratic society and indeed a democratic movement, is people have to be respectful of the fact that we don't all have the same opinions at the same time, and you have to talk and find ways to get along. That's, I think he hit the nail right on the head there.
Well, I appreciate that, but I've had a lot of problems with a certain group of people, a small but vociferous group of people in the 9/11 Truth Movement who don't seem to share that democratic sensibility. Their viewpoint would be that, for instance, I'm sure if they're listening now, which is perhaps unlikely, they would be screaming and yelling and saying, oh, no, Barrett allowed an evil no-planer to come on his show and plug a website. Barrett is a disinformation agent. These people think that, they have this Stalinist kind of mentality of, drum out the heretics and, burn the heretics and silence them. And anybody who even allows any heretic to get two words in edgewise is an evil heretic and disinformation agent themselves. I mean, there's a complete, mass psychosis, a real witch hunt kind of psychosis among a certain group of people in the movement, including, I'll name names. Arabesque is the leader of this, and there are, I won't name any more names, but there's one for you. People who are just out witch hunting and silencing people in a kind of McCarthyite, Stalinist way that's completely inimical to the democratic sensibility. So, Richard, what do we do to bring these people back to sanity?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it is difficult because there's always the possibility that there's some people who are causing trouble on purpose and other people who are causing trouble by accident. And how do you differentiate that? And clearly, if you can, that requires different sorts of interventions. And also the context, it matters. I mean, are you talking about what to do with group meetings, or what to do in your context where you're trying to have a broad discussion across the whole nation via radio wave?
Right.
And I won't pretend to have the answer, unfortunately. But I think that if we can persist in setting a good example of respectfully listening to people and in groups, and we've had trouble with this in Seattle ourselves, with where people just disagree so much with someone who's going to come out and speak, that they don't then want to have anything to do with the group anymore. And, you know, I think there are points where, you know, people have to act on their own principles and say, well, I think if the train has got so far off the track, then that I have to get off this train. Well, yeah, that's a matter of principle, and if you really feel that way, follow it. But other times, I just am not sure why it becomes so passionate to people sometimes that it's not okay to agree to disagree and to say, okay, you know, and in our case, this Judy Wood was coming out. And,
right.
You know, her theory is very controversial. And, you know, kind of like you just said with the no plane stuff, you know.
Those are the two big controversial theories. Yeah.
Right, and it's not, and I agree with you, it's not the kind of thing we want to lead with when we're talking to people who are new, but that doesn't mean that, you know, we shouldn't talk about it amongst ourselves, or at least, and find ways to talk about it as long as people think that it's really valuable to talk about. So anyway, I guess that's, you know, sort of a long way around, but I think setting a good example is the short answer to your question.
Okay, well, we could always use a few more good examples, and Richard, I think you are one of them. Well, thanks. We'll be back for some more conversation, some democratic, open conversation where all viewpoints are entertained and the best ones are emphasized after the break. I'm Kevin Barrett. This is Truth Jihad Radio right here on We the People Radio Network. We shall return. Welcome back to Truth Jihad Radio, where we are asking the 9/11 Truth Movement to come together. And hey, we've got somebody coming together right now. It is perhaps the most illustrious guest I've had in many a fortnight, the inimitable Alex from Texas. Come on in, Alex. How are you?
Hey, how do people know this is Alex Jones just because I said my name was Alex?
Your voice.
Well, you know, that's what appeared on my caller screen there, Alex. So, you know, I had to give away your anonymity there pretty cheap.
Oh, no, I didn't.
How's it going?
They just immediately recognized me, I guess, for my voice. I'm good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm driving along down the road here listening to you guys, and I don't really bring this up a lot on my own show because, in a way, I think it adds fuel to the fire. But I think, you know, so much has basically precipitated out that now we can look at it with some clarity and some hindsight. I mean, if I can spend a minute or two on this, I'll add a few basic facts and hang up and get both of your response and take, because I want to, you know, hear what you think about that.
Take as many minutes as you want.
Well, thank you. If my cell phone starts cutting out, just tell me because I'm driving to the hills here.
Okay.
It's real simple. We know the Pentagon for decades illegally and now publicly. The Army Times just announced we're going to have full armored brigades in the U.S. for Homeland Security, regular Army engaging in law enforcement. So we know that, just like in Michael Moore's movie Fahrenheit 9/11, that the group baking cookies once a week talking about peace, or people going and giving flyers to Halliburton employees in Houston, had Army intelligence infiltrate them, try to get them to commit crimes. This goes on. I mean, mainline churches are infiltrated. Everything is watched by the military-industrial complex. And so we know from the Kennedy assassination and what Jim Garrison went through and what he wrote about, what they do. And they had people infiltrate the movement to expose JFK's assassination by the shadow government. And they would act normal for a few years and then suddenly announce they were Martians, or suddenly announced that they fingerprinted their daughter every morning to make sure it was still her, and, you know, all this craziness. So there's standard stuff that goes on. So let's not deny that we have infiltrators and attackers. There are people with fake handles under my name, especially under your name, Kevin, running around all over the web saying racist things, horrible things, things about Jews to try to put it on us. There's actually a YouTube investigation going on right now about that. But bottom line, this is going on. Now, that said, I noticed day one that the no-planers for Tower 1 and 2 and that the space beamers would viciously attack anyone who didn't immediately agree with them and scream and yell at them and scream and yell at me and try to bully me and others and then viciously try to discredit the key researchers that were getting things ready for peer review, which they did, the key researchers that were really on the trail, that's now fleshed out with Kevin Ryan and all these other people, and Stephen Jones and yourself. I mean, this is bombshell with a thermite and it's just so incredibly, on target. Just every step of the research continues, and it's really waking a lot of people up. So I noticed that not only did the bullies attack everybody 2 years ago and say, you've got to agree with us, at that critical point when the establishment finally decided 9/11 was a big threat to them, they then attacked all the key researchers savagely, and then national TV kept giving them attention, kept giving and saying, and so now when I do a national TV appearance or I go on a national radio show, they say, oh, you're the group that thinks space beams did it, or you're the group that thinks there were no planes. And I would talk to these no-planers, not their low-level, weak-minded people that follow them, but I would talk to the high-level, you know, the progenitors of it, and they would say, well, listen, I had family that was in New York, and they saw the first plane, or they saw the second plane, or I had family friends going back to college who saw it, and they'd say, shut up, liar, you're probably just a fan. And I'm like, well, no, I mean, there was hundreds of cameras that, picked up at least the second plane. I mean, we can argue about where they painted up, like Northwood says, that the CIA switched planes. That's all legitimate. But I said, and they're, on and on and on and on and on, just viciously. So there's no credibility to that. There is credibility to a missile at the Pentagon, and the evidence really stacks up to that, and then another aircraft painted up like 77 flying over. People smelling the cordite, all the film footage that has been released, sure enough, doesn't show the plane. So they really are desperate to try to poison pill and discredit the movement. And they always say, well, free speech. Well, free speech doesn't mean that we don't criticize what they're saying. Free speech means we don't stop them from what they're saying. So watching this from the inside and being fooled by some of the people, I built a lot of them up and gave them big platforms myself, and, in what ways I could. And it's become very clear, and other operations, everything that can be done to make the 9/11 truth look clownish, then the progenitors of the no plane hypothesis go out and say that 9/11 truth bombed the Army, Navy, Marine Corps recruiting center in Times Square. They do everything they can, and we've also seen them coordinating with mainstream TV, and I've even seen the body language on the ground, and they come together to events, mainstream media with them. So there's no doubt this is a classic op. They've got a lot of mentally ill people and a lot of stragglers that, follow them, and a lot of weak-minded people, and there's some personality conflict going on as well. But in closing, that's not their big salvo. That salvo failed. And I want to report that to everybody. I've been analyzing it in depth. It has failed. The good news is that that is falling apart. The bad news is there is a concerted operation for the last 4 or 5 months from hundreds of quarters, from Skeptics Magazine to you name it, to people in our own, quote, movement, will operate a few years and then activate. That's how an operation works. They try to build cred, and usually no more than 18 months, generally 12 months, and they activate. They're following a blueprint. And we have Army field manuals on this from other countries they've done it in. And most of them are former Army. It's not even hidden. Like, a lot of them are former PSYOPs. Like, oh, yeah, now I'm the truther. Oh, yeah, I'm PSYOPs. I was PSYOPs. I can help you. But then they activate. They start coordinating with screw loose change. And they activate. And they say, guess what? 9/11 truth's dead. There's no numbers. Nobody cares. At a point when 9/11 truth has grown to the point of polls worldwide, the majority believe the government's lying. A huge percentage of that majority believe it's a total inside job. With all these celebrities and German defense ministers and Italian presidents and Italian intelligence chiefs and best actress and governors and Willie Nelson and then other people just defecting from them and then saying, yeah, the government killed Kennedy. Folks that did 9/11 killed Kennedy. I reported that 6 months before, because my stuff was given to Bruce Willis by Rick Linkletter. He said it on my show, and people said it was a lie, but then Bruce Willis came out and said, no, it's true, but I have no further comments. The top comedian, best friends with Sarkozy in France. On and on and on, daily bombshells where false flag, inside job is now becoming mainline accepted. It's the same thing that Gandhi and others said. It goes through three stages. First it's ignored, then it's ridiculed and attacked, then it's universally accepted. We are having victory, but the enemy are masters. Like Tokyo Rose, even as Japan was totally collapsing, saying, G.I., you've lost, G.I., you're dead, G.I., the war is over, GI, we got Hitler. When he was imploding, we've got super weapons, it's over for you. No, you terrorists that carried out that. You're no planes, your space beams have failed. Announcements that 9/11 truth failed. You didn't think we'd notice operatives, those out there listening and monitoring, all activated 4 months ago?
Okay, Alex, that's pretty well put. Can you stay on and can I ask you a couple of quick questions after the break?
Sure.
All right, we're going to hold over Alex Jones. We blew his cover. Can't go back now. Alex from Texas. My guest is Richard Curtis, and he'll maybe ask a few questions too, so stick around.
All right, thanks a million.
Okay, we're back. This is Truth Jihad Radio. I'm Kevin Barrett. And today we've got a heavy lineup here. Richard Curtis, philosophy professor from Seattle. And Alex Jones has just called in from Texas to join the conversation. In case you missed it, he just summed up his view that there's a lot of COINTELPRO activity coming after 9/11 truth. It's not winning, though. We're still plowing ahead. And, you know, Alex, I actually agree with a lot of what you said. I agree completely that the contingent at Scholars for 9/11 Truth and Justice, and especially Kevin Ryan and Steve Jones, too, those people have done terrific work. Their paradigm has really gotten somewhere as far as getting into the peer-reviewed journals and coming up with the kind of evidence that we can cite in the most important kinds of forums. But at the same time, I think where I would perhaps disagree a little bit is, you know, what do we do with this situation? Like, number one, I don't think that all these people, these snowplaners and directed energy speculators, are psyops. There may be some, but I think that the psyops people in those camps, and perhaps in the other camp as well, are people who are basically just trying to start fights. So the best way to avoid having the movement split up and broken up by people trying to start fights is, rather than to try to completely censor the heretics or shut them out or, you know, or scream at them and email, get in flame wars with them and fight them all the time, the best way to resist this is a sort of a jiu-jitsu strategy of getting out of the way. And to me, that means, like, give everybody their say, but emphasize the good ideas. And that way, you're not feeding the fire by going after them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, my phone's breaking up. Can you hear me good?
Yeah, I can.
Okay, good. Yeah, I mean, I wasn't really even commenting on what you were saying earlier about not fighting with them and then blocking them out. It's just, if I have a C-SPAN event, say again, I'm not going to stick a no-planer or a space beamer who's run around attacking. I mean, you have to remember, a lot of these people have viciously attacked other nice researchers with more legitimate research. So you know, they attacked first. That's why people said, well, we're ostracizing you, because they were vicious bullies. So that's the bottom line. But the point is, they're being ignored. They have failed. I mean, when it comes out on Keith Olbermann and New Yorker magazine that Dick Cheney wanted to, you know, Cy Hirsch, that Dick Cheney wanted to, just a few months ago, paint up Navy boats like Iranian patrol boats and have them attack U.S. destroyers in the Strait of Hormuz. I mean, when it comes out, I mean, the Chicago Tribune 6 months ago admitting that Israel premeditatedly attacked the USS Liberty, that whole debate's over. All those debunkers, all those books, all those TV specials, it's the NSA's declassified, everything we said was true, everything the admirals I interviewed, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, now dead, died in 2004, Admiral Moore, Admiral Geist, I interviewed them all. I interviewed dozens of these people, you know, with LBJ on the phone saying, I want that goddamn ship going to the bottom. It's all come out that Israel and our disgusting black ops government attacked their own ship. And our military and police better get that through their heads. Everything we said's true. It's over. We've won. See, the enemy's putting out the hoax that we've lost. And that's failing, too. But the point is, I don't want it to have any effect. 9/11 truth has gone from the fringe to the mainstream to universal acceptance. And I want to let your guests have the time here. I just want to declare the victory has happened. Now let's go wake up the dumbbell sheep that still don't know what's going on. You know, it's free on Google Video, Truth Rising, what the 9/11 truth movement really is, who we've confronted, all the incredible people that have come out, Fabled Enemies I just put out with Jason Burmes. It's free on the web, or get the DVD at Infowars.com. Keep fighting. Keep spreading the word. And we're going to take their tool of government-sponsored terrorism away from them. I'm having Georgia sneak attack Russian-controlled territories, international territories, and then try to hoax the Americans that Russia really snuck attack. That failed. This stuff used to work. It doesn't work anymore. Because of people like you, Kevin Barrett, because of people like your guest, and I'm going to let you guys get back to what you're doing, but I salute you, and just God bless you, and God bless the great folks at WTPRN that have kept it together, and I'm glad to see it's back on the right track and really exploding and moving forward, and you guys have a good one. Okay, Kevin?
All right. Well, thanks, Alex. I appreciate it. Keep up the great work yourself. You're the guy who really got this all going, and my hat's off to you.
Well, by the way, I want to get you, both of you, on the show. I think I told my producer a few times to get you on, but I tell him so much he forgets. But, Kevin, if my producer doesn't call you Monday or Tuesday, please contact us because I want to get you on. Take care, my friend.
Sounds good. Okay, take care, Alex. Bye-bye. All right, that's the inimitable Alex Jones, the man who was spending the summer of 2001 begging people to call up the government and ask them not to do it. He's been on top of this thing before it even happened, and it took me 2 years to figure it out. I have enormous respect for him. Richard, do you have any response to what Alex was saying?
Well, I think that he's making a very important point that everybody in the movement needs to be informed on COINTELPRO. I mean, that they need to know about the history there and how those things work. And, I think the first thing he said, and then he kind of got away from it onto other topics, but it is chillingly significant that the military is stationing troops on North American soil for the first time. And with the economy melting down, it seems to indicate that they may be much more panicked than they're letting on, and when they panic, of course, bad things can happen. So it makes for a very dangerous time.
Indeed. And, the economic collapse has been the excuse for tyranny and for martial law situations and for war. It's the easiest way for the government to get out of being blamed for a bad economy is to blame somebody else over across the ocean that speaks a different language, has a different skin color, go out and kill them. That's all their fault. I mean, that's what we're facing here, is the possibility that they're going to try to, flee from this situation into a wider war that would make us all, forget the way they mismanaged the economy. So, Richard, again, I think, originally we were going to talk about solutions to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, and we have precisely, 15 minutes of talk time left to solve that problem. We may have to put that one off for another date, because we have a long list of callers. Should we bring up a caller?
Well, we have to.
Okay.
Go to the
phone. It is our duty to take calls, and, Robert's going to have to be last in line, because he already had his say. So first we're going to bring on Jeffrey from Kentucky. Hello, Jeffrey.
How you doing, sir? I called in last week when you had that one German on about the metaphysics and everything. About the head injury and all that.
Yeah, that was interesting stuff, huh? what's up?
When I got out of the military in 2005, I got a hold of the 9/11 Truth Movement, and I saw what was going on, and I drove on with it. But I think a lot of people that have their doubts about where the 9/11 Truth Movement is going in the future are quite concerned about, the military stationing itself in America and the economy collapsing, and how 9/11 Truth can actually blend in those aspects and bring forth the proper change with the sense of urgency that we see happening in the world the way it's unfolding today. And I think that's where a lot of these people in the truth movement as a whole have seen and have come to the conclusion that 9/11 may have stalled out some, 9/11 truth movement may have stalled out some, or maybe they're too specialized in the 9/11 and maybe we should branch out a little bit. And I believe that if truth in the truth movement is a free market system and everybody put their opinion and their truth and their facts out there, and whatever holds the weight will rise up, like Drew's, Kevin Barrett, like Tina Jones and Kevin Ryan. Their stuff holds up to scrutiny upon levels above what us normal researchers would put ourselves through. And I do believe that if we all just get the facts and information out there, the proper information and the right facts would soak the top like cream. You know what I mean?
Well, we're working on it, and I think it's happening. And I think the peer review publications and the recent work of especially I think Kevin Ryan is really a great kind of unsung hero, as whose research has been as important as anybody's. So those guys are really doing great work. What do you think, Richard?
Well, I think that we have to keep in mind, too, there's a presidential election going on, and that just attracts a lot of attention. So I think that, you know, if people are feeling or thinking or saying that the truth movement is stalling, that the same thing is true about all kinds of movements and people who are trying to get different messages out, that, you know, takes over.
Yeah.
And, you know, there will be more space for conversation. And I think, you know, part of it, at least, you know, with the people that I'm spending time with, is that, you know, they're very excited about Obama, and that seems to trump involvement in 9/11 truth issues, and I think there's a problem with that. But
there's a huge problem with that, and there will be more space for conversation on that after the break. This is Truth GM
Radio.
There we go. Yep, I'm Kevin Barrett, and we are talking with Richard Curtis, philosophy professor. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Truth Jihad Radio. I'm Kevin Barrett. Today I'm talking with philosophy professor Richard Curtis. We had a little call in there from Alex Jones. And you know, regardless of what you think of what Alex had to say, and I think there's some truth to it, I think that the fact that he's calling in here and you know, giving we the people a boost and stuff, that's all good. That's a sign that, you know, he and others really, really want to unite everybody that's doing productive work and you know, kind of to keep the conversation positive as much as possible. And I guess Robert from Arizona, who apparently was probably the trigger that got Alex to call in, which, hey, thank you, Robert. I'm eternally grateful for that. I love having Alex on my show. We'll give Robert a chance to respond. He is on the line. So, hey, hi, Robert. How's it going?
I'm doing great, Dr. Barrett. I'd like to just add a couple little things. Number one, I got in communication with the producer of September Clues, the guy that put it together, and he's from Europe, and he claims to be a retired video editor. He now has a band and does some other things. He does not communicate very well in English. And what I think a lot of people glommed on to was that he claimed that the images we saw on the video, and let's face it, all video that we watch are nothing more than images. He claims that the images are not genuine. He doesn't say that there are no airframes.
Right, right. And that is an important distinction. I'm a little skeptical about this guy, though, just because, I'm skeptical of all anonymous people whose work, especially if their work causes division and strife. For instance, the person that calls him or herself Arabesque, assuming there is a person behind that moniker, seems to me to be such a person. And, you know, where's the human being behind this name? You know, somebody who comes in, does very slick writing, and then suddenly starts going on the attack against effective activists who use their real names. And likewise, September Clues was anonymous, and that was kind of a red flag for me. So this person really should go ahead and go public, in my opinion, if they want to be taken seriously.
He is public. His name, he has a band, and the band and his name are public. He has an email address. It is not Arabesque. The fellow,
no, I'm sure it's not.
The fellow communicates under the name of Simon Schack. He does not communicate well in English. But when I really queried him carefully, I discovered that there was a Murphy's Law principle of communication going on here, that the right hand didn't understand what the left hand was talking about. And the most important thing of September Clues is that 50% of the movie covers video anomalies that have nothing to do with aircraft. It has to do with stolen audio tracks going from network feeds to private videos that were later released. All kinds of problems like the Verrazano Bridge in the background, 7.3 miles away, traveling fast enough, including the landmass under it, behind the trade towers, fast enough across the background to get a speeding ticket.
Right. Well, Robert, you know, I have seen that film, and I would like to see more people with expertise in video take a hard look at it and look at its claims. I think that all of the network video from 9/11 absolutely must be released. And Ace Baker, the video fakery guy, whose work, you know, I've never gone out and endorsed him or anything, but he has that petition to have the
networks release all of their video, and I think that's an important issue. They should release that video. It has nothing to do with these particular claims. But again, the important thing is we need more experts looking hard and critically at this. When I look at these claims, I look at Eric Salter's rebuttals at questionsquestions.net. I'm not convinced that this is stuff that I would take to the bank or lead with. Richard wanted to get in a word. Robert, can we let Richard get in a word, because he has a take on this. Richard?
Well, sort of. I have a take on the discussion. I certainly don't have a take on the issue. Because, it is astounding when you sort of sort through it, how many different kinds of questions people ask about the story, the official story, and the ways that they ask those questions. I mean, it just goes on and on. And sometimes the controversy itself gets to be overwhelming. But, my point is, just to come back to this bit about respectful disagreements, that, I also have a great deal of respect for what Alex Jones has done and continues to do to get the word out on all of this. But I have to confess, there are times when the words that he chooses give me a little bit of chill, because I think sometimes people might take offense where it's not the intent, where I don't think his intent is to cause offense, but sometimes I think it might come off that way, and that's where I think it's sort of, I just want to come back to the point of, we need to keep our heads up about what's going on with government intervention in the movement and what the clues are to watch out for that. And that, again, everyone needs to read the history of COINTELPRO to know what's going on and to pay attention for that. And then, as a counter to that, we have to find ways to talk about these complicated issues where we're disagreeing. And also, and I think for a lot of people, the hard part is, well, what is something that you want to expose the public to, or have the movement associated with in a public forum? So, this example from a recent event here in Seattle, so we have Judy Wood out, and that ended up creating divisions in the group.
Because now, how recent was this, Richard?
This is just a few months ago.
Okay.
I was living in Los Angeles for the first half of the year, so I wasn't here for it, which, I don't know, hopefully puts me in kind of a middle position, because I didn't have a stake in that fight as it was happening. But I think one of the people who left the Seattle group is someone who I think is acting on very good principle, and he just thought it was really such a bad idea that we have a public forum in which this idea, in which Judy's what's a good generic way of putting it? Her
directed energy
beam theory. Yeah, there we go. Directed energy beam theory. He just thought that presenting that was just was going to be damaging to the movement, and that's that of course becomes the nut that we really are fighting over here is should the controversy be something that we put front and center when we're having public events, or not? Now, in our case, I would sort of defend the decision to bring Judy out, in that we are very often attracting an inside crowd, and that's kind of a problem with our events. So we need to reach a broader audience than we have been so far. And so, functionally, it really was kind of an inside conversation, even if we're trying not to make it a broader conversation with the public. So I don't think that one was so bad, but I understand why people disagree with some decisions, and why they worry that it's not just about disagreeing with the idea, but it's disagreeing with putting the idea out. Okay, but in the end, if we're going to come together and understand that any movement involves thousands and thousands of people, of activists, tens of thousands certainly, broadly speaking, but we there's lots of us, and we have lots of different ideas, and we're not going to agree about everything, and we have to be accepting and tolerant of each other.
Well put.
Like a preacher yet?
Yeah, but that's the kind of preaching we need to hear every once in a while. In the academy, that's how we try to do it. We try to have a respectful, critical conversation where the best ideas stand on their merits, not because of louder shouting or better insults or boycotts or McCarthyism or, you know, Stalinist repression or anything like that. That's the theory, at least, although I guess I kind of got chased out of academia by way of a witch hunt, but it's not supposed to work that way. And, you know, I think focusing on the good ideas, letting the good ideas rise to the top without getting unduly hung up on bashing what you think are the bad ideas is a real kind of a fine line to walk. But, you know, we have no choice but to walk that line.
And I think that's a good way of putting it, too, not getting unduly hung up on bashing what you think are bad ideas. That, yes, you should critique what you think are bad ideas, but you don't have to get hung up on it.
Yeah, well, it's like a tar baby, you know. There's so many of these people who are just, like, stuck to these flame war tar babies, these email exchanges where they're just going on and ranting and raving and insulting and using foul language and because they're so excited about these bad ideas by somebody else that's, you know, supposedly seeking 9/11 truth, that they just have no time for anything productive. And I think that's the biggest problem, is the time wasted. So, you know, focusing on using time well and using critical, careful, critical, calm arguments. David Ray Griffin is a model of that. And here we are at the end of the show already, and we haven't solved the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Richard, we're going to have to do it again sometime.
Okay. Anytime.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks for coming on.
My pleasure.
Okay, take care, Richard.
All right, good luck with the
kids.
Thanks.
They need it. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was Richard Curtis, philosophy professor from Seattle, 9/11 Truth supporter. You can find his biography on the terrific website, patriotsquestion911.com. Thank you to Robert, and thank you to Alex Jones for calling in. It's always great to hear from Alex, and thanks everybody else. Sorry I didn't get to the couple of callers there. We'll try again next week. Actually, not next week. I'll be back tomorrow, same time, same channel, right here on We the People Radio Network. All the world is true.